This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
I'm Helen Farmer. Fantastic to have you with us on the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. We had some really interesting experts across a whole range of topics on today's show. I was in conversation with Rose O'Donovan about how incorrect breathing can affect children from their physical development to their brain and behaviour. I was also chatting to one mum who's taken matters into her own hands after her son was bullied. If you ever want to be part of the Scouts, we'll tell you how. And they're in need of volunteers as well. And young Cameron has invented a robotic arm inspired after his auntie's accident. Plus, getting you in the mood for the weekend. And Kareem from Kids App has got all the latest activities for kids and some unexpected birthday party locations too.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Are you breathing correctly? Are your children? Do you even know what correctly might mean in this context? Rose O'Donovan joining us now. She's a breathing specialist, fully qualified with the Oxygen Advantage. So breath training, exercises for everything from anxiety and depression through to sports performance. And we're having a special look at children on today's show, taking your questions on 4001. Of course, you've got your WhatsApp and the ARN Play app too. You can be anonymous if you prefer. We really don't mind. Just want to make sure you get some answers, maybe some reassurances, a bit of an action plan, if you will. Rose, how are you this afternoon?
I'm very good, Helen. Thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be here.
Now, I've got a bit of a problem in that I've got a bit of a cold. So we're going to be talking about blocked noses and nose breathing over the course of the next half hour or so. You're a big advocate for nose breathing, nasal breathing. And why do you feel like we're suddenly paying more attention to the way we breathe at the minute?
It's fantastic that we are actually paying more attention to breathing at the minute. And I think half of Dubai has the cold, by the way.
Oh, really? I am suffering.
Poor breathing patterns and dysfunctional breathing patterns are linked to over 200 chronic health diseases and lifestyle diseases.
Wow.
So there are some really unexplained patterns of this is a symptom of COPD, this is a symptom of diabetes, symptoms of obesity, symptom of sleep apnea, so which is mouth breathing. And, you know, we have to look at, did mouth breathing actually cause this first? And, you know, which one came first?
But I guess addressing the mouth breathing is something you have got an element of control over. And we're going to be talking about some of the techniques that you use. And none other than Coldplay's Chris Martin has been in the headlines recently and as an advocate for Oxygen Advantage. Can you explain the philosophy behind it?
He has, and that article came out recently. I was back in Ireland at Patrick McKeown's house. He had all his master instructors over for a summit at the end of August, and that article was printed quite shortly after that. Oxygen Advantage has been around for over 20 years, so we do have a huge amount of scientific backing and studies, and we're very, very credible in what we do. And Patrick is, he worked with Buteyko Clinic, and the premise behind it is we're basically looking at the sensitivity to carbon dioxide in the body, the rate of respiration and your tidal volume. So we're really looking at what is going in and what is going out of your body in incorrect proportions to the intensity of how you're living. And we do deal with anything from anxiety up to sports performance. And the, you know, the main thing is that when our nose is for breathing, and we want to eradicate mouth breathing and have proper jaw development and proper health, because it's hugely linked to your brain development and to mental health disorders, etc. So we have quite a huge program, but we have a lot of scientific evidence supporting what we do. And I think that's a really important point to get across to your listeners, because there is so much on the market in terms of breathing programs.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that the nose is for breathing, mouth is for eating and talking.
Yeah.
What makes the nose the preferred vessel?
The nose is a preferred vessel because it just has so many functions. It cleans the air, it humidifies it, it warms it. It's where nitric oxide is produced in the body. It also allows the air to go to the lower lobes of the lungs, where oxygen is displaced properly. When we mouth breathe, we constrict our airways, and that does not happen when you use your nose for breathing. And there's just zero function in the mouth for breathing.
We're talking about children in particular. this afternoon, addressing some of the short-term and long-term physical issues, complications that come up if they're not breathing properly. If you do have any questions or concerns, this is your chance. We've had, we are going to go to the text line next, but we've had questions about, is incorrect breathing linked to bedwetting? We've got questions about a 12-year-old who's always been a noisy mouth breather and a snorer. Delighted to have with us today, Rose O'Donovan. So do get in touch. If there's anything that's on your mind, this is raising red flags, you want an expert second opinion, we are here to help.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking the power of breathing, getting it right, and the impact it can have not only on your mental health, but physical health development, especially in children, with Rose O'Donovan. She's a breathing specialist and fully qualified with the Oxygen Advantage. Let's talk about children in particular, Rose. What kind of things are you noticing, whether it's with clients or as you're walking around Dubai? Where are we getting it wrong?
We're getting it wrong that we have an issue with craniofacial development, which is solely down to our major factor would be mouth breathing. And craniofacial development is development of the jaw, the teeth. So we're talking about malocclusion, where we have incorrect bite or when the teeth sit together. And that we have kids now with stuffy noses, sleep problems. And I'm just going to list the sleep problems because I know you've had a number of questions come in. So you'd have things like bedwetting, nightmares, breathing through an open mouth, tangled sheets or waking up in tangled sheets, holding the breath through the night, stuffy nose, snoring, audible breathing, fatigue and inability to concentrate and sweating. This will be a result of mouth breathing. So when a parent says, how do I recognise this? And if this is a sleep issue you're seeing with your child, then you need to have a look at or the mouth breathing during the day.
What about things like dry mouth and smelly breath and things like that, Rose?
100% mouth breathing. And they are, you know, they're very simple to sort out. Any of this, the one thing I'd say if it's a parent listening, we don't need to worry or label or, you know, have any kind of crisis, because when we talk about mouth breathing, 90-95% of the cases we can change, and we can definitely start looking at the craniofacial development. And the major importance of this, Helen, is that later in life, when I see adults, and I deal mainly teenagers and adults, they have issues either with mental health, with physical health, as a direct result of poor breathing mechanics in their body. And then if we look at kids, they are facing the same issues. And for kids, 40% of them with dysfunctional breathing will develop ADHD. And 80% of mouth breathers will have a 20% reduction in brain capacity. So imagine that we're just not giving the potential to our children today. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, it's one of the passions I have because they're tomorrow's adults.
That's right. Mm. And I just want to ask, and please don't bamboozle me with too much anatomy, but when we're talking about, I guess, the development of the jaw, of the palate, the bite, why does mouth breathing versus nose breathing make such a difference? What's happening in the face, in the system, that would promote correct development if you are nose breathing?
So when we talk about the development of the palate, we've got the we've got the jaw. There's the upper and lower jaw. And we have our tongue. And our tongue is a really strong muscle, and that pushes the front teeth forwards. That doesn't happen if the mouth is hanging open and the tongue is resting on the lower palate. We need the tongue, and we do exercises with kids like making the N sound. So if you're listening or driving, just make the N sound and you'll see where the tongue rests on the roof of your mouth. And then when we swallow, the tongue should be on the roof of the mouth and we shouldn't see your cheeks moving. We should just see your throat moving. And that's quite a hard exercise for kids who are perpetual mouth breathers. And even for us to do it, you know, to repeat it 3 or 4 times, it's a nice exercise for your throat. So when that is missing, we have poor jaw development. And then we have the long face syndrome, where you see the jaws dropped and they'll have dry lips, and then it leads to dehydration, because mouth breathing is responsible for a 42% loss of moisture.
Wow.
Yeah, it's huge.
Rose, let's go to the text line. Jay's been in touch saying, we've got a daughter aged 12, always been a noisy mouth breather, and maybe I'm noticing it more or it's getting worse, but I can hear when she's around. She's always been a snorer, even from a tiny baby. It's a standing joke. It doesn't bother her. The thing is, she says she can't breathe through her nose and feel like she's not getting enough air, and if she tries, she hasn't got a cold or runny nose, and as far as we know, not an allergy. No other problems, extremely fit, does high level sport, and it doesn't seem to affect her, but the noisy breathing is something else. Any ideas?
Lots. And it's great that she's fit and that she is doing physical exercise, because physical exercise is really important. I would look at GOPEX exercises for her. So good oral posture. So I would be willing definitely to have a chat with this client, because it's quite simple to start looking at this. Good oral posture exercises where we start aligning the airways over the rib cage, teach her how to swallow properly. We have a nose unblocking exercise that's very easy to do. You take a breath in, you take a breath out through the nose, you pinch the nose and you nod your head and you hold as long as you can until you feel you have to let go. And you repeat that 3 to 5 times with a recovery timing in the middle, and that will unblock the nose. And then I would look at her snoring. I would not, I don't want to worry you, but that's not something that she will, you know, she shouldn't carry that through the rest of her life, or she will face quite severe problems. We always say, if you know, if this is happening at 12, what's happening when she's at 50?
Mm-hmm. Hope that helps, Jay. I'm very happy to connect you with Rose. If you do want her details, by all means, drop me a little line and I can send those over. Up next, we are going to be going to the text line. Liam's been in touch saying, I was like this as a child and it turned out I had severe nasal polyps. As an adult, I went to the doctor and sorted myself out, but my parents didn't do anything when I was a child, and it made me quite miserable with bullying because I'd have to sit with my mouth wide open so I could breathe, and having a cold was a nightmare. Hopefully helping some families avoid those issues, Liam. Thank you for sharing that.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Are you breathing right? Are your children? To answer this and to help you out, most importantly, is Rosa Donovan. She's a breathing specialist, fully qualified with the Oxygen Advantage, and big advocate for nasal breathing for all sorts of reasons, from brain development, physical development of the face, sleep, bedwetting. There's so many issues that we've been discussing already, chronic pain, chronic issues in adults as well. So if you do have any questions, please do get in touch. Anonymous, if you prefer, and Rose has got a message here with no name on it, saying, my son is 8 years old, breathes mostly through his mouth. I missed the part where you spoke about how this relates to ADHD and brain development. Where and how can I get more details? Does it impact sensory or focus and attention, and can it be resolved? Can you help out Anonymous for us?
Yes, I can. 100% it affects brain development when we are mouth breathing. It is generally overbreathing and we have lack of oxygen to the brain. So there is there are many papers that actually support that mouth breathing, there is a link to ADHD. And sometimes this is incorrectly diagnosed, because you might notice if you go, and any parent that goes to any doctor or dentist, they may never ask you the question, how is your child breathing? So you do. You probably should look at it. What was the other question, Helen?
Relating to basically, can it be resolved? Mm. So let's talk about some of the techniques that you use, and even some of the implements and instruments.
Yep. So it can be resolved, and this is, you know, it's the great thing about breathing. It can be changed. Our bodies and brains are literally plastic, plasticity. So we have ABCs, always breathe correctly for kids. And to figure out if they're really a mouth breather, get them to hold water in their mouth for 3 minutes. And a true mouth breather cannot do this. So that's a number one go-to little test.
So interesting you should say that, because yeah. I took my daughter to the dentist the other day and the dentist encouraged her to do this.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
And I was like, this seems very interesting. Mm. And she was able to do it despite being a bit of a mouth breather at times. So the holding the water in the mouth test, and then what?
Yeah. So that would be the first one. And then you need to really observe your kids, observe them at nighttime if they are snoring or mouth breathing, and then observe them eating. And parents probably hate to hear this, but they need to chew. Chewing is a major part of how the jaw is developed, and it also really promotes nasal breathing. So the chewing and the swallowing is super important. Then we would use a steps exercise to train their tolerance to carbon dioxide. And kids are very different to adults in how we treat them, because their aerobic and anaerobic systems are developing. We would teach them how to breathe like a mouse.
So what does that look like?
You get them to hold their finger under their nose, and you get them to be really quiet, and you teach them about the teeth, where they should line, and the tongue should be on the roof of the mouth, and that you try to get them to do this at all times. And generally it's probably better coming from an outsider than parents, but the GOPEX, like sit up straight and good oral posture, all comes in there. And the swallowing and the chewing has to go hand in hand. So there's quite a little bit of criteria, and then the sleeping. So you need to look at them all the time, and it can be rectified. It does take time, and there is no magic fix. It's just like dieting or exercise. You've got to do this day in, day out. It's a lifestyle that you actually want to change over to nasal breathing and give them the best chance at mental development.
I sent my husband to you, Rose, and he came back with a bag of goodies for nighttime.
How is it getting on?
It's definitely improved.
Oh, that's good to see.
But this included mouth tape. Yep. I was not adverse. Also, what he called nose turbines. Is that
yeah,
right
we
term?
Wanted to open up his nasal cavity. So we had Liam texted in and he said, oh, I didn't fix this until I was an adult. And he was quite upset about it. So parents, listen, if your kids are suffering with breathing or you think there's problems with the tonsils or adenoids, have a look at it now. I worked with a parent and kids yesterday and it was fantastic to see such a caring parent because she said, I want the best for my kids. And with your husband, we opened up his turbines. We did get him taping at nighttime.
He's got a beard. It wasn't very sticky.
I can imagine. There's a couple of things we need to check before you can tape. So I'm not advocating everybody and anybody out there to tape. We have MyoTape for kids, which means it's open in the middle and their lips are not sealed. And that's nice and safe. And it has worked an absolute treat with a lot of kids. And Patrick has designed that tape. So please check with me or someone that is qualified before using it. But it does work really, really well.
Let's go to the text line, Rose, saying we've got a 9-year-old son. He breathes through his mouth when he sleeps because he's got buck teeth, two front teeth protruding. We hope to get him some braces once he gets all his permanent teeth. Is this something he can work on now or will it only be sorted with the braces?
No, I think we can start working with this now. I would look at some myofunctional exercises and getting the swallowing pattern. So we look at swallowing patterns that the tongue is actually where it should be. If the swallowing pattern is off, it will go to the side. And we can also make sure he's using his throat and airways properly. Mm-hmm. If you wait for the braces, we've got to be really careful of if teeth are extracted. And I would refer to maybe Tina Rodica. I'm going to get that name wrong. But,
I will send you Tina's details. She is a fantastic dentist here who's as passionate as you are about breathing. So I will send you. Her Instagram is Tina Rokadia, Rokadia, and I will send anyone those details. But she's absolutely fantastic and asks all the right questions as dentists should do of children and adults regarding breathing.
And on that note for the craniofacial development, we can avoid braces and all that dental work if the jaw is developed properly. And it's the lifestyle change, Helen, that has really, really pushed our jaws to like not develop properly anymore, and where we see kids with hanging open mouths and long faces and droopy eyes and shadows under the eyes and runny noses. So dental work is not always the answer, and it is if breathing isn't corrected or the jaw isn't being developed, they're going to run into even more problems afterwards.
Yeah, kind of one step forward and two step back. Exactly. If that kind of base isn't established. Rich, it's about kids today, but because Rose is great when it comes to sports performance and breathing, I'm going to sneak in a question from you. He's saying, I'm training for a triathlon. I've been told that if I can force myself to breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth, it'll improve my performance, but it's so hard.
I'm with you, Rich. Yeah, that sounds like a difficult circular motion of breathing. So to put a context to it, we can perform up to 85 or 90% of our full capacity via nasal breathing. So I would suggest for health purposes that you try to revert to nasal breathing only. We can have a look at things like turbines to open up the nasal cavity, or you may need to drop your performance slightly. And when we go nasal breathing, the next protocol will be nasal mouth, and then it will be mouth. And that's in terms of intensity when we're pushing up beyond your threshold. So And the other thing that I really need to point out is the 42% dehydration by mouth breathing. And then you've got the lack of diaphragmatic and pelvic floor flow in your body. So we want proper muscular contractions in the gait pattern when you're running. And if you're mouth breathing and struggling, that's going to put a lot of stress on your nervous system. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of things to think about there. And maybe, send some questions. I'm happy to answer them.
Hope that helps. Rosie Donovan with us this afternoon. And it's so interesting talking about just the link between breathing, the jaw development and chronic issues. And we've touched on the past, you know, bedwetting, erectile dysfunction, mental health issues as well. And talking kids today because, you know, better to sort these things early on. A message here, no name, and it's saying, our son's 6.5, mouth breathing, nasal congestion, tongue thrust, developing an overbite, has a tongue and lip tie and needs early orthodontics before more damage is done to his face, which is elongating and flattening due to mouth breathing. The tongue tie explains why breastfeeding was a nightmare, but could Rose help without surgery and orthodontics?
Yes, I always say to parents, just try before surgery, because surgery has a huge impact on our nervous system, and it's a trauma to the body. And surgery on really young people can be reverted. You know, it's like if you have turbinates removed from your nasal cavity, they can grow back. It sounds very much like some good, decent exercises for your kid will work. Name the problems again, Helen.
Let's see. It's quite the list. Yeah. Nasal congestion, tongue thrust, developing an overbite, yep. Tongue and lip tie.
Okay, so we can work with the nasal congestion 100%. And part of that list that you're giving sounds like it's completely mouth breathing driven. So if he's been mouth breathing for 6 years, then that's a very adequate list of symptoms. So yes, we could help before surgery.
Let's squeeze in one last question. And it's for a younger one, actually. Ruba's been in touch saying, my daughter's 18 months old and started loudly mouth breathing over the summer. Before this, she breathed completely normally and sucked her thumb to sleep. But since she stopped sucking her thumb, her breathing is really quite loud. I've taken her twice to the doctor, who said there's nothing wrong, but I'm concerned about the effect on her teeth. And she quite often has bad breath. And I've been reading articles saying it can be linked to ADHD type symptoms and underdeveloped facial muscles. Should I push for a referral for an ENT?
You could do. Correct breathing volume is essential for health. And there's thousands of papers to support this, but medicine and dentistry have overlooked it. So it's obvious here the doctor did not ask how is she breathing. So we would need to get her breathing through her nose at nighttime, and bad breath and halitosis are all part of mouth breathing. So this can be corrected by the sounds of it. She might need an ENT, but I think you've got a few other options before you have to go that route.
How long do you think you can take to feel a significant change or even reverse the adenoid face, Rose?
How long is a piece of string?
I was using
yesterday as an example. I had immediate results, but if the adenoid face is developed, start as early as possible. And the adenoid face, like Helen said, it's that long face. Your adenoids are at the back of your nasal cavity, and your tonsils are obviously in your throat. They're there to protect you from bacteria, and they will be enlarged in kids. So don't panic. Mm-hmm. Leave them there is my advice. Unless they're severely enlarged and they have to be taken out. But 9 times out of 10, they shrink with age usually after 7 to 10 years. So they should be left there. And it can be reversed. But the sooner the better.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are and really do appreciate you coming in for a chat and to answer the many questions we've had on this topic. I think a lot of food for thought there. And I think a lot of us will be going home and perhaps not so subtly observing the way our children are breathing. But if anyone does want to speak to you direct, I'd be very happy to share the website. We've got roseodonovan.com. But if you want that on the WhatsApp, on the ARN Play app or on the SMS, drop me a little message and I will send you the link. Rose, thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much, Helen.
Last selfish question. Until I get rid of this cold, I'm never going to take nose breathing for granted ever again. Any tips?
I know. Probably use some saline to help you clear out the nasal cavity. Small breath holds for adults are really safe. That helps to build up nitric oxide. And breathe through your nose as much as you can.
I'll try my best. Rose Donovan, breathing specialist. Say again, love.
Take a day off work.
I wish. I'm going to pass that on to my boss. The doctor says. But yeah, lots of you getting in touch on this topic. So a really interesting one. If you do want Rose's details, let me know.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are, of course, a few weeks into the new term and unfortunately some kind of unpleasant issues arising. According to research, 1 in every 5 students are bullied. And some of the reasons, excuses, are physical appearance, race, ethnicity, gender, disability, religion. And after seeing her own son struggle with bullies, one mother has taken matters into her own hands by creating an international app addressing bullying, helping the lives of children and teens. So welcome to the show, the CEO of Bullying Buddy Consulting, Tara Lynn Towns. Tara, how are you this afternoon?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. I'm so interested to hear how this all started, because I feel like as parents, all we want to do is fix things. We see our child scared or in danger and we want to rush in. And sometimes there's a place for that. And sometimes the way you've gone is looking at a much bigger picture. And this is obviously really personal to you. As I said, your own son was bullied. Can you tell us about his experience and how it affected him and you, Tara?
Yes. So my son, Encore, was born with dwarfism. And the turning point for me was when he went to a birthday party. He was about 7 years old, and his peers were there. And there was a child there who obviously has never been around someone who is different, or just wasn't trained to, you know, handle that. Mm-hmm. And so we were all there, and the little boy just started calling my son names, terrible things, you know, calling him a monster, saying, "What is that?" What is, just yelling these things out. And my son just stood there very, very quiet, and the mom stood there quiet as well. My daughter was there, yeah, and my daughter said, "Mom, you know, can I say something?" She was very upset. And I did. I spoke to my friend whose daughter's birthday party it was. And she said, "I know I'm going to dismiss the mom." What the mom did, though, was grab. He still continued. Like, he was screaming down. As the mom walked out of the door, he's still saying, "Ugly, ill, who are you? What are you?" I mean, just things that I would never imagine. I know that children, I'm a developmental therapist, so I do work with children, but this was just a little bit above, you know, normal misbehavior from an adolescent. Mm-hmm. And so basically, my son was just, you know, very shut down. Days later, it took days for him to return back to his normal routine of playing, and because he's like the life of the party. Mm-hmm. And he just went into this, at 7 years old, he went into this place that, you know, I was very, very afraid. Back then I was working on my master's to be a clinician, but I wasn't there yet. So it was a very scary place. And that is the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. There's many more episodes of him, people, adults, staring, mm-hmm. pointing. You know, when we go eat, they watch every bite he takes. And, you know, he used to say, "Could we just leave and I'll eat at home?" You know, just compromising for society, mm-hmm. not being able to handle diversity. So that's what pushed me into it.
Tara, before we talk about the app that you've created and the work that you're doing, I would love to, I guess, take advantage of your experience, as you say, as an expert, but also as a mum. You know, how do you think parents can be doing better to educate their children around differences that they might see in the world around them? What can we be doing at home?
Well, the first thing is expose your children to the beauty of being different. Being different is not something to be afraid of necessarily. When we have children who have never seen anyone different or just really are not being taught how to cope with diversity, that's where the issue lies. And so as parents, we can jump in there very, very early in the pre-operational stage of development is my favorite place to teach children. We wait after the mess, for the aftermath, which sometimes is unfortunately too late. So while they're between 2 and 5, show them people who are different. You know, there's diversity dolls. I mean, do activities, coloring books that have, you know, people with different abilities. I don't really care for the word disabled. I know society uses it, but I call it beautifully diverse because we're all different, and that is the beauty, being different. Introduce your child to diversity early, and you will not have the fear that they have, because that's all this is just them acting in fear of the unknown. And also to be an example, right? Like, exactly. Sometimes when we see something different as a parent, if someone walks by, you know, "Oh, look at that fat guy," or "Look at that," or do not do that in front of your children, because you really, they're sponges and they are soaking up every bit of an example that you are to them. So, mm-hmm. you know, just embrace different different diversity, but show your child that it's something to embrace, espouse, and love versus something to lash out at or be afraid of or what have you. You'd be surprised when you introduce it early how accepting children are. They're blank slates when they come here. So everything that they have picked up along the way is environmental, whether it be external or internal. So set that good example.
Well said indeed. Thank you, Tara, for
thank
that.
You.
I think it's really important to remind ourselves. And as you say, a lot of it does come from fear, and a lot of that comes from parents who are uncomfortable themselves or fearful themselves. And we need to get past that in order to do better for the next generation. Now, to come back to that awful experience that, you know, you and Uncle went through. You've done a lot of research into the effect that bullying has on children. And as you say, for days, he was in quite a dark place at just 7 years old. What did some of your research uncover, and did it shock you?
Oh, yes. 160,000 children, you know, in the United States just by itself a day, not a year, a day, miss school because they are afraid to be bullied. We have suicides taking place. My personal work that I do is I work with families who have lost children between the ages of 7 and 17. This is the most staggering, part about what I personally do. And we're losing children every day. I just have two new moms that I was introduced to who just lost their children, and a little boy last week, 10 years old.
Goodness.
Who we lost in on school grounds. And so I guess the most shocking is that as a clinician, it's not shocking that a seven-year-old could be depressed, obviously, right? Because we have all ages and stages of different things that happen. However, it was beyond shocking that a seven-year-old would take their own life. Mm-hmm. So I guess through my research, the stats for, you know, them missing school or how many children per year are bullied or how it relates to adult bullies. I like to remind people when I do my trainings that little bullies become big bullies. So corporate bullying is really big. Domestic violence, elder abuse, all of those, that nature. It's not something that, you know, someone just says, wakes up one morning and says, hey, I'm going to, you know, beat my children or beat my wife or I'm going to be mean to everyone that I hire. This is, you know, a character trait that is in you when it wasn't addressed in that primary stage. So the most shocking I would have to say is that we lose, per the CDC, about 5,000 children per year in this age group, and about half of those numbers are related to bullying. However, that's the last statistic that was, 7 years ago. It hasn't been updated since the pandemic. Yeah. We've had hundreds of children here take their lives in that age group, hundreds. So the app will catch the data set so that the CDC has the correct numbers. Well, so yeah, that's the most staggering.
Tara, you're doing amazing work in this area. We're going to find out next about the app that you've developed. We've got Tara Lynn Towns with us speaking there about her experience with her son Uncle being severely bullied. But she's taking steps. You can find out more at tinybemighty.org. And we're going to find out next about the app she's developed and how her son is involved as well.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Speaking to us now is Tara Lynn Towns. She is the CEO of Bully Budding Consultant. She's a support to those who've lost children to bullying through taking their own lives. And this is based after, well, some horrendous abuse of your son, Uncle, who was born with a rare condition. Thank you for being with us, Tara. We've had a lot of messages on this topic and just really the horrors of bullying. And it's not just the child that goes through that. It is the parents as well who feel things so deeply on behalf of their children. A message here saying, my son is shy, not as social as other kids. I was like that. His peers don't like to play with him and tell him to go away. One child even kicked him at school. I brought it up at the school and they just spoke to my son about it, said they monitor the situation. There's nothing that the school is doing to encourage other children to include kids with differences into play and working together. I don't know how to manage it. I don't even want to face other parents because all they do is brag about how good their children are. But it's the same children who purposely exclude children with differences. Where can we begin with this awareness? He's been through night terrors because of bullying. Tara, we talked earlier about beginning at home in terms of, you know, just normalising, you know, the beauty and diversity and differences. But when things do get serious, what do you tend to advise parents to do?
First of all, I just want to say to that mom that my heart goes out, because these are the beginning stages. Night terrors, I don't know, I didn't catch the age of the child, but night terrors, it's just showing that there's a trauma and it needs to be addressed. And unfortunately, a lot of the school systems are overwhelmed with this. This is why I consult all over, because they themselves do not really know what to do with it in certain cases when it grows or develops into something that causes something like this. And so what I would say, number one, is this mom made the right move on contacting the school. But when the school doesn't show up, there's legal rights. There's child protective laws that they have to abide by. Mm-hmm. It's a personal goal of mine to run for Congress very soon. I'll be in Washington in October, which is anti-bullying month. So we have a team of people who are just going to really push for a bill. And we want this bill to be worldwide. I get contacted from people all over Johannesburg, Australia, everywhere, with children who are also attempting to commit suicide or committing suicide behind this issue. So what I would say to this mom is, please don't stop. You can bug this school, because it is your legal right to bug this school. Mm-hmm. I know that it's hard mentally for the moms and the dads. It's very, very hard. It's stressful, right? You do not want your child to be not feeling welcome, number one, but to suffer trauma going to school of all places. We're supposed to learn and we're supposed to be safe. Mm-hmm. Those are the two things that children are supposed to experience. So what I would encourage that school to do is to create a buddy system, a welcoming system. I mean, if they're not doing it, then this mom can be empowered by being the first mom to really keep, you know, nagging them and pushing them. If she does not get any, you know, resolution or resolve with that, then she can go higher up. There's superintendents, there's your government, there's legislation, there's different things that you can do. A lot of parents stop at that place, number one, because they're frustrated, right? They're not getting results. So most of us are result-driven mm-hmm. individuals. But secondly, because they don't know that they can. So there's a lot of fears, like, oh, what if my kid gets bullied even more because I speak up? Or what if he gets kicked out of the school, or teachers treat him mean? Or, I mean, there's so many different things. But what I say as a parent whose child went through this, and as a mom, I mean, I'm on this mission. I'm a clinician, I'm an author, a speaker, all of this, but I'm a mom first. And my, you know, my goal is to not lose any more children in this world. And so how do we do that? We show up. Mm-hmm. We show up and we show out. And I don't mean, you know, be aggressive, or because that's not going to get anywhere. But you definitely can be pushy.
Absolutely.
It's a life.
Because, you yeah. know, you've got to be that voice of your child. You've got to advocate for your child. And it sounds yeah. like you're doing this, obviously, on behalf of your son, but it sounds like you're doing it on behalf of a lot of parents who haven't yet found their voice, and educating schools, yeah. which seems ironic. Can you tell us a little bit about the community that you've built through the app and how it works?
Yes. So, number one, we're allied with a lot of government officials, and that's where we need to be, because they are the ones who fight for the laws to change. In the United States, there's not one bullying policy that is mandated for the schools to follow and have a protocol. Individual states on the state level, they have certain, you know, policies and procedures. Mm-hmm. But if we're losing hundreds of kids in the last 9 months, then that proves that whatever's put in place is not working, right? Mm-hmm. So we've built a very strong community with policy and procedure makers, with professional athletes. One of my business partners is Tyrone Poole, played in the NFL for 12 years.
Wow.
We've partnered with a lot of athletes, and believe it or not, either they were bullied, they were the bully, or they protected someone from a bully. And, you know, athletic, or being an athlete, was their way out, basically, of their bullying experience. We also have partnered with other organizations. We've partnered with nonprofit organizations, as Tiny Be Mighty is a nonprofit organization. And then we've definitely have partnered with superintendents in different schools. I do trainings, I do workshops through the Boys and Girls Club throughout the United States, and primarily, you know, through schools and private schools, charter schools. And, you know, we're working now to get the app into every single school in the United States and worldwide.
I was just about to say, we need you here. I wish we didn't.
Yes.
I wish this wasn't necessary. But in the meantime, it's incredible to have people like you, Tara. It really is. Can I ask how your boy now? Because I know he's involved and he speaks with you. How is Encore?
Yes. He's doing great. He uses music. We both love music. And he's an incredible artist. I got him a studio, and that's how he released. I just want to say that the parents out there, if you do have a child going through this, or I like to say growing through this, please find them a release. Because just us, we're not enough. Even me and what I do, it still wasn't enough. I had to find something. He's in martial arts. He's into his music. He's doing things that he can release his frustrations through. Because when you're the receiver of the bullying, if something is not being done on your behalf, you clam up, you close up, you lock the key and throw it away. And this is how we're losing adolescents. They just feel like islands and isolated in this war against bullying.
Well, it's wonderful to have you creating those connections and creating awareness here in the UAE with us. As I said,
please
keep in touch. If you ever find yourself in this part of the world, I'd love to meet you and introduce you to some of the schools here in Dubai. And in the meantime, it's tinybemighty.org. Tara, thank you so, so much. Wishing you and your boy all the very best. I mean, talk about Mama Bear. You are just incredible. Thank you so, so much. Tinybemighty.org there. And you can find the app as well if anyone does need support or references, resources, and a bit of a community as well.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are full of bright ideas and inspiration over the next couple of hours with health experts, with things to do over the weekend. And joining us now in the studio is Shalit Michelle Burrows. She's the District Commissioner for British Scouting Overseas here in the Middle East region. And as we know, COVID affected many people, many businesses, many organisations, and one of those was the Scouts, due to families and leaders, kids, of course, leaving Dubai and being a voluntary organisation. They've had to go online for some time, but they're back and might need a bit of your help. Shelley, so lovely to have you with us. How are you today?
Hi, good, thanks, Helen. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Now, I grew up as a Brownie, which I must be honest, I was asked to leave for not being enthusiastic enough. And then I joined the Guides. My brother was... he was a Beaver, then a Cub, and then a Scout. And it was very much part of the community I grew in. I could still do my Brownie Guide lore now. How many years later is that? I dread to think. But for people who aren't familiar with the organisation, could you explain a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so the Scouts is an international movement. It's got over 40 million members worldwide. And I think we're across something like 216 countries.
Goodness.
Here we're British Scouting Overseas. This is our area. British Scouting Overseas has four districts. So we're the Northern Europe, Southern Europe, the rest of the world, and us here in the Middle East. The Middle East, we have Scouts in Kuwait, Saudi, Qatar, Bahrain, Oman, and of course here, Dubai and Abu Dhabi.
Wow. I hadn't realised it was quite so widespread. I kind of assumed it would be in some expat communities because of that kind of British connection, but it sounds like it really is global.
Absolutely.
What are some of the kind of myths and misconceptions that you've heard about kind of scouting over the years that this might be a good opportunity to address, Shelley?
I think we are more outdoors and development, fun for all ages and for boys and girls as well, not only just, quite often we think Scouts are only boys. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we've developed most in to keeping up with times. Equal opportunities, girls can now be a Scout. Boys can't be a Brownie or a Guide, but girls can now be Scouts as well. So that's really interesting. We still do go back to basics, and I think that's what Scouting is about. We still do like to go out and do camping. We still like to go out and have fires and learn to cook on the open fires and camp, you know, with our tents.
Knots. I remember a lot of knots.
Always knots. Yeah, we always have to learn the knots and lash-ins, building contraptions where we go and camp. We like to build, for example, our washing up station. So at the same time, we have developed to move with the times, but we still are back with basics.
Mm. Which is so valuable, I think, to a lot of families, those kind of values and those, I guess, practical skills.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I feel like a lot of kids are in danger of turning into a massive thumb.
Yes. And I think that's where Skelton really does help. We do teach skills that perhaps the schools, you know, obviously don't. We do teach how to start a fire. We do teach how to tie a knot. We do teach how to cook. We go camping, we go climbing, we go rock climbing, photography, any, you know, it can be so much different skills that the schools obviously don't have time to put into their own programs.
You mentioned all ages there, Shelley. What is the age group that you kind of cater to in the region here?
So in the region here, beavers start at 6, and so beavers are 6 to 8 years old. Cubs are 8 until 10 and a half. Scouts are 10 and a half to 14. We have explorers that are 14 to 18. And we do even have network here that if the young people are still here at university, up to 25.
What was your involvement growing up? Were you a brownie?
I was a brownie. Yeah, I wasn't in the Scouts. I myself got involved here because my son was a cub. Usual story, needed a cub leader. So I ended up stepping up. He's now even left home and I'm still involved.
A question here from Varsha saying, what are the uniforms like now? Good question. I've got vivid memories of a brown and mustard V-neck.
For the brownies,
and some
yes.
culottes as well. Yes. What is the Scout uniform like now?
Well, funnily enough, they are actually being redeveloped soon. So we look forward to seeing the new uniforms when they come out. But at the moment, they are polo shirts for the beavers and the cubs. The scouts and the explorers wear like a beige cotton shirt.
We're going to be talking about waiting lists, about venues, and yes, the challenge of COVID. Shelley joining us from the British Scouting Overseas for the MENA region. If you've got any questions relating to it, please do get in touch.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Dib, dib, dob, dob, talking scouting this afternoon. We've got Shelley Michelle Burrows with us. She is the District Commissioner for British Scouting Overseas here in the Middle East region. And some questions for you. I've got a question for you because we know what an impact COVID had on so many group activities, whether it was choirs or sports camps. And I know that Scouts was hit hard. You went online for a while, which is always, you know, it's something, but it's not why people join a community like that. What impact did it have on you guys as an organisation specifically, Shelley?
Okay, I think it had a huge impact. In the beginning, I think that we played quite a huge part in the young people's lives because we did continue virtually. We tried to continue some of the scouting skills whilst they were at home, which is fairly difficult trying to do it online on the computer. We even managed some camps. Everyone was given a programme. We were all doing it at the same time, but are in our own homes. Mm-hmm. The young people had to set up their tents inside the house.
Oh, I love it.
We even managed a district of camps. The whole Middle East, all the scouts at the same time were doing the same activities, unfortunately, online. Obviously, it went on longer than what we were all expecting. It got harder and harder to keep the activities going. And I think also the young people were doing school online. Mm. Everything was online. The computer screens, it was difficult. So slowly we did die off, kept going as much as we could. And it's been 2 years. We were lucky that earlier on this January, a few of our groups were allowed to go back into the schools. We have to follow the Scout Association rules, plus obviously the local strict guidelines here in the UAE. I need to just give a shout out to those schools that have let us back in if I can. So Uptown International, Horizon International, Kent College, King's Albertian and JPS so far for allowing us to continue.
It's not enough though, is it? You've got 300 kids on the waiting list who want to be part of this community and you need more venues. If
yes.
you could kind of wave a magic wand, what kind of places would you like to be able to gather and meet and teach?
Yeah, ideally it is schools, I think, because they have the grounds and they also have the equipment maybe that we'd like to borrow. We meet in any space that they can have free. We're grateful for anything. So it can be the canteen, a large classroom, dance halls, sports halls. And of course, when the weather gets cooler, we like to be outside on the sports field, in the playground. We're grateful for anything, really.
If anything's coming to mind, guys, do get in touch. I can connect you with Shelley and the team off air, 4001. A question here saying, my son is 11. How to join? How much and what to expect? Is it weekly, monthly camps? Can you break it down for us?
Yeah, so we have a wait list, unfortunately, which you touched on earlier, but I can send a link for anybody to join this wait list. We like to do weekly activities where we will meet in the different schools. They will be on different nights depending on what schools allow us. Before COVID, we had 8 groups plus our explorer groups. As mentioned just earlier, we're down to just 4 groups because at the moment we can only have 4 locations. The activities we do depends on the badges that the young people choose. So we can do anything, again, depending on the weather, but we go from kayaking to climbing, hiking, camping. We will do cooking, photography, computer science, cycling, international experiences, anything like that. It changes and it will vary depending on the age group and depending on the time of the year. I think we're one of the most affordable out of school activities.
I think a lot of people are really looking for that right now. When you say affordable, what are we talking?
Generally, we're about 300 dirhams for the whole term.
Wow.
If we do a specialised activity or a camp that term, it may be a little bit extra. We're a non-profit organisation. We don't make money. And I think that's what we need to get across. We don't make money. Everything that's paid just goes straight back on activities for the young people.
And a question here about volunteering. I know you're on the hunt for some people to help out. And this, you know, back in the UK, they've started Squirrels, which is for little ones aged 4 to 6. That's not here yet. But I guess the more hands you have helping, the more opportunities there are for kids in the community. So what kind of qualifications or background could a volunteer have?
Okay, you don't need to have any qualifications. It can be anybody from any background, any race, gender, any age. We just ask for you to be over 18 for an adult leader. There's different ways that you can get involved. Obviously, we have our uniform leaders that show up every week, that plan the activities, run the program, plan the camps. We have somebody who might be more of an occasional helper, can't commit to every week, but would like to help out when they can or when needed, again, on activities or at camps. Some people are not really up for wearing a uniform, being in front of the young people. So we also need people behind the scenes. Mm. We have badge secretaries, treasurers, you know, someone to manage the money for us. Each group has an executive. So we need group chairs and group secretaries. There are so many ways that you can be involved.
Well, I have to say, lots of questions, lots of people asking for links. Sanjay saying, sign me up. Sanjay, I think you're a bit old, but you could volunteer, asking for your details, wanting about joining Jamboree 2023. What is the best way of getting in touch with you, Shelley?
Okay, so we do have a waitlist email, and that is scoutingindubai@gmail.com. That is for the young people if you want to sign them up. Like already mentioned, we do have a huge waitlist, so until we can get more volunteers and more venues, that is not moving very quickly at the moment. But if anybody would like to be a volunteer or just wants more information on how to be a volunteer, they can email me. That's shelley.burrows@britishscoutingoverseas.org.uk.
If you didn't catch that, drop me a message on 4001. I'll send you both of those email addresses. And yes, any schools, any facilities listening today who think this could be a brilliant addition to their offering, I'm sure would really appreciate hearing from you. Thank you so much for coming in. It's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes you just don't realise what's happening right under our noses. And I think that affordability piece is really, really important. So if you are looking to volunteer, if you are looking to find out a little bit more, drop me a message on 4001. I will send you everything you need to know. Shelley, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
All the very best.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We love introducing you to inspiring people and celebrating young minds who are making a difference. And our next guest, 17-year-old Cameron Autry, is one of them. He is putting all of his creativity and curiosity for science and engineering into helping others. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good, thanks.
Have I snuck you out of school early or are you out already?
Unfortunately not.
If I had an earlier show, I would have put a request in for you. So you're 17. Where are you studying and where are you from originally?
So I'm born in South Africa, Indian descent, and currently I'm in DIA, Dubai International Academy at Emirates Hills.
Now, your dad is a mechanical engineer, which is a bit of a clue about what we're talking about this afternoon. Tell us a little bit about growing up. Were you taking things apart, putting things back together?
Yeah, for sure. That
with permission?
that's a bit of a tricky one to answer. But yeah, definitely taking apart things, putting them back together. I enjoyed Lego, funnily. I still enjoy it.
You are talking to what is officially known as an affle. I'm an adult fan of Lego. I play Lego almost daily. But you weren't just doing Lego. I heard there was a car involved.
Yes. So growing up as a small child, my dad was into cars and he actually built his own car, Cobra.
Wow.
So like from a really young age, I was introduced into this sort of mechanical engineering environment. But it's not only that. It's just most of my family comes from an engineering background. So growing up in such an environment has really inspired me.
I guess you start to see what's possible. You probably look at things in a completely different way to someone who's not aware of the mechanics of it and the possibilities. And that, and honestly, that's what I really like about Lego is, you get a set and you can build it and that's great and you can put it on the shelf. But the real fun is taking it apart and what can you rebuild with that? What can these parts be used in a different form?
So funnily enough, I actually have a box of Legos, so these are all the extra pieces for my builds. So like normally when I finish a build, like my most recent one was a car, I just added a bunch of extra parts to make it even look even better and more functional.
Mm-hmm. And this is now that creativity and that scientific mind you've applied in a way that I don't think many 17-year-olds would perhaps necessarily think of. Can you tell us about what you've created?
So this was actually for a school project. I did this back in 2021. I created a bionic prosthetic arm, which is controlled by muscle movements using an EMG sensor.
What? Okay, slow down.
It's a bit of a mouthful.
A prosthetic arm.
Yeah.
Can I ask why you chose that as a kind of an area of interest, something you wanted to focus on?
Yeah, so originally, it was inspired by my aunt. She does industrial engineering and she recently moved to software engineering. But it wasn't because of that. She was involved in a car accident, which left her as a quadriplegic.
Oh,
but it's not that. It's the way she inspires the rest of us. So one of the most inspiring things to me was that she actually went skydiving a couple of months ago, which was really amazing. And that really brought the idea of this prosthetic arm, like, what can I do to make a difference to somebody else's life? Mm-hmm. Because when I recently researched about this topic, there's only about 20% of amputees who have access to this sort of prosthetic arms and legs because the price difference is so high. Mm-hmm. It's not accessible to a lot of people. So this really was the starting point for my idea.
So the cost barrier is very real for people across the globe. So what kind of, I don't want to say what you're charging, but you know, how are you making it more accessible?
So for me, it's not really the commercial side. I really just want to be able to bring this product to the market so that people can have access to it, who need access to it. So I started off with a budget of about $75.
Materials?
Yeah. And then it increased to about $120. But because this is just a prototype, it's not the exact amount, but it's the ability that you're making it accessible. So so using like things like 3D printing, so all emerging markets sort of stuff. So it's not like the top end stuff, but it's doable and it is something that I think will make a difference to a lot of people's lives.
And I think when we talk about making a difference to someone's life, yes, there's going to be a functional piece around having a prosthetic arm, but we're also talking about the ability to work and earn and support a family. And this is one a very high accolade from school and also a scholarship as well. Can you explain the kind of I guess a bit about the process about creating that prototype.
So creating the prototype, initially I had about a 4-month period of creating it. So this was during like the COVID era where we weren't allowed to travel. So it was the perfect time for me to do it, keep myself interested at home. So I got a 3D printer, which was one of my birthday presents. And then I used that 3D printer throughout the summer designing. You experiment, you go back to the designing phase and you continue. So it was all 3D printed. I bought some stuff off like Amazon and stuff like that so I can get it to function. And then I think the hardest or the most challenging aspect for me was the coding, because I was new to that. I hadn't done that before, but going through a project like this really introduces you to a lot of stuff that you might not like or you do like. Mm-hmm. And for me, coding is something I really enjoy. And because of that, it engaged me in other fields like STEM as well, because I have a large spatial bias. I enjoy playing with stuff, Lego, yeah.
Yeah. So what's next, can I ask? Because we're looking at, I mean, the fact that you've created this is just incredible. Prosthetic arm for around $100.
Yeah.
Where do you take it next? What would you like to do?
So next, I really want to bring it to the market, like I said. So I'm looking for some interest, mainly in not so much financial as yet, but financial will be a little bit later on, but more of resources, business interest in my project, so that I'll be able to take it to the next step, make it more feasible and more usable for people. So that's along the lines of where I'm aiming to go.
Sanjay saying, wow, just wow. Sabina asking, where can we see it? Great question. I'm desperate to see it.
So I've uploaded it on my Instagram.
Okay, I'm going right now. Okay, tell me, go.
So I think I've uploaded it onto my Instagram.
What's your handle? We'll give you a little plug.
Cameron Archery, K-A-M-R.
Don't forget how to spell your name on radio.
Yeah, sorry.
Right. I've got you.
I'm not sure if you might be able to access it.
Oh, come on. So what's feedback been like?
Feedback, a lot of people have really enjoyed it, taken an interest, but that's not really the people I have access to. So the people I want access to is people who don't have arms, who are amputees. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the people who I do have are interested in it just because I think it looks really cool and it's functional. That's pretty much it.
And what about, you know, as you say, you've been opened up to different avenues through coding and speaking to experts in different fields. Where do you think this could take you personally and professionally? Has it changed the way you might, you know, what you might want to study or what you might want to do?
Yeah, so I'm going along the lines of mechanical engineering or mechatronics in the future. I don't particularly have a dream job.
I've just seeing the video, by the way, of... I'm going to come back to the dream job, but I also want to talk about what I'm seeing in front of me, which is a hand responding to your muscle movement.
Yeah. So the thing I really like about this is that it's muscle movements which aren't necessarily based on your arm.
Okay.
So because it's a hand, amputee might not have a hand until so far. So you can use the EMG sensors, which essentially check the electrical activity in muscles on different parts of your body. Okay. So if you want to have it on your leg or something like that, where you can control the hand movements, you just have to like flex a muscle or particular muscle and it contracts and expands.
Now, we've got some very proud parents in the green room. Your mechanical engineer father must be absolutely glowing. What was their response to this project?
They were really excited. They thought it'd be a really good opportunity for me to do it, especially because it'd keep me busy over the summer.
Out of mischief. Well, I have to say, it's really wonderful to hear, I guess, a positive coming out of the pandemic. As you say, a perfect time to be working on a project such as this, and not just for you and your own betterment and education and career prospects down the line, but something that could be potentially life-changing, life-saving for people that have been sidelined for so, so long in this space. So if anyone does want to connect with Carmen, please do get in touch. I'd be very happy to connect you offline, 4001. And maybe it is business advice, maybe it's to do with space and technology. I mean, I'm sure you wouldn't turn down a few dirhams or two, but you can contact the show on 4001. Carmen, thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. I can see by the look in your eyes, this isn't the last invention you've got up your sleeve. So definitely one to watch. Thank you. Really do appreciate it. And if you know any young person who's doing something special, get in touch. Fan.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are sorting out your weekends, your birthday parties and more. Kareem from Kids App joining us live, and I'm happy to take your questions as well if you need some inspiration or you've got a bit of a conundrum when it comes to the children in your life. Kareem, how are you?
I'm great. I know the answer as usual, but I'm not going
to
say it.
Don't you dare. Friend of the show, you're not allowed to win. But I knew you would. I could see you thinking about it on the screen. Fantastic to have you with us. And there's so much happening around town at the minute. We're in a really sweet spot. Lots of new openings. The weather, of course, opening up some new opportunities as well. And I don't know about anyone else listening, but it feels like there's a birthday party every other weekend. My children have a better social life than me. So let's start with that, because the pressure feels like it's on a little bit. What are some of your kind of wish list when it comes to birthday parties here in the UAE? And is there anything particularly exciting you think is worth highlighting?
So, I mean, first of all, you know, it is birthday season. And there's a couple of things I'm going to highlight. The first one are not the wish list, but the classic ones. Okay. There are so many, at least I feel from our users, there are so many new parents in UAE and in Dubai in particular. So they often don't know a lot of the classic places. And I'm going to tell you four or five places that actually every single one of them, and I realized after writing this, I've done a birthday for my kids at each and every one of these.
Okay, give me your top five, Kareem.
Bounce, classic. You know, I think every parent in Dubai knows Bounce, maybe not the newer ones. The birthdays are for age 5 to 12. As the name suggests, it's an active, jumpy place for kids. People love their birthdays there. There's one branch in Oukouz, one branch in Festival City. And you get a party host that takes you through different games on the trampolines. You get customized food options, grip socks, and you get something called X Park Time, which is a bit more of a parkour-y kind of trip there. And we have a 10% off at Bounce. So right now, if you book through Kids App, you get per child, it's 126 dirhams.
Do you know why I like Bounce? Because we're at a magical age now where you don't need to stay with the children. You can just drop and go. Oh. And you can go over to the courtyard and have a nice coffee at Cassette. It's brilliant. A little shop. And then you scoop up some sleepy children who are hopefully all tired out. My daughter's going to Splash and Party next week, which I know is on your list as well, which is more kind of water-based fun. And we've done camps there. And the staff at Splash and Party are so, so nice. It's in kind of Jumeirah 2, Jumeirah 3. Do you have a deal there as well?
We have a deal. It's very affordable. Another staple, like this is, you know, Dubai birthdays for the last, I don't know how many years. 89 dirhams per child if you book for a weekday birthday through Kids App. And you get 1 hour, 45 minutes. You get the splash pad, water slides, kids meals, entertainment, zip line. You get the whole birthday bash show that they put on for you. And you have four different themes to choose from.
Okay. I want to have a party there. Where else do you rate?
There's a couple more staples, and for sure everyone will know them. I mean, Cheeky Monkeys has been around for a super long time entertaining us. I remember this was probably the first play area I took my kids, mm-hmm. and I probably took them to a birthday there as well and arranged one for them there. So we have 10% off at Cheeky Monkeys birthdays. They have a themed one at 180, you know, that's with all the bells and whistles, and then the Razzmatazz one at 134. You get a party room, play area, arts and craft, amazing hosts, giveaway prizes. I mean, honestly, as I was making up this list, you know, Helen, the Cheeky Monkeys birthday options are huge. So you really have to go to Kids App. We really add a lot of data and information on there. So you'll find so much information about what they actually do.
You've just reminded me, actually, mentioning Cheeky Monkeys there. We went to, and I don't do brunches with the kids that often, to be honest. I don't find it that relaxing. But we went to brunch at the weekend at Canary Club, which is in JLT. A gorgeous place. I've been there for dinner, but they've just introduced a new family-friendly brunch, and they've got helpers from Cheeky Monkeys there, and they'll take your kids to the play park so you can actually have an adult conversation. And I love it when people think of things like this. You can have a bit of time around the table. When the kids get bored, they'll take them off. So yeah, shout out to Canary Club for thinking of the little
Helen,
things.
It sounds like you and I have reached the point where we're so happy to have someone take our kids away for a while.
I'll tell you my two favourite things, spending time with my children and not spending time with my children. tell us then about some, I guess, kind of not necessarily under the radar, but maybe some more unusual options that people might not be aware of for kids' parties.
Sure. So, I mean, what I'm going to do, because we have a lot to talk about, is I'm going to list them very briefly. Yeah. And I mean, all the information is there on Kids App. There's, of course, Air Maniacs, which is a massive inflatable park in El Cuz, 115 to 245. That's the range for birthdays. As usual, 10% on Kids App. They have Zigzag, which is their own specialized zipline, becoming quite famous. They do giveaways, a whole bunch of stuff on the app. Then we have something called Kids Unlimited, which is relatively new. It's over in Jumeirah Park for the younger kids, I would say. 0 to 6, 7 is the best age group. And they have packages from 102 to 116, 2 hours party time. They do 8 invites. They have a really interesting signature structured program, which is why I mentioned them, which includes a warm-up, small obstacle course, relay game. They're all about different kind of skills. That's the idea of Kids Unlimited. Nice. So check it out on Kids App, an interesting place to do birthdays.
What's login? That's all it says on my list from you. I've never heard of this.
So as, you know, an exponent of, you know, active kids and social kids, you know, I still chose to include this new place called Login, which is a gaming cafe, right, for kids. And what they actually include is, I mean, their whole idea, and if you read about the parents that actually started it, they include, their idea is social gaming. So if kids are going to play, you can make a party out of it. You can make it social. And they're for 100 dirhams per child. Okay, 10% off if you book through Kids App, max 20 kids, 2 hours of continuous gaming, PS5 or the standard computer area. You get like food and a soft drink. The cake is not included. So that's something different. Not everyone's cup of tea, but I think what I like about it is, you know, kids love gaming and this is a great way to get them all together in a social manner.
You've also got Divas on Wheels, which is run by two of the loveliest Dubai mums I've ever met. They bring it, like, they literally roll out the red carpet for your kids. They bring the party bus to your home, roll out the red carpet, and then on board, I mean, they've got karaoke, they've got dress up, they've got kind of pampering and makeup. So a better one for the kind of the smaller groups, I'd say. Right, you don't want to invite the whole class, but who actually wants to invite the whole class anyway? But I wondered if that was something you were able to get any discount on, given that it is a kind of a small business. Is that possible?
Absolutely. Again, through Kids App, they have packages starting from 2,400 and add-ons for the various little activities that you can do in addition to the basic package. And, you know, the bus arrives, you get 2 hours and 15 minutes there.
Oh, wow.
There's, you know, welcome pink bubble lemonade. And I'll tell you something. I mean, my girl's 10, 11 right now, and this is the kind of birthday that they love.
Because they feel grown up. They feel like little kind of mini mummies. But it's a lovely, lovely company. Divas on Wheels. Someone just messaged going, what's it called? We've got time for two more parties before we think about what's happening over the weekend. What's made that final list, Karim?
So one great thing, actually, and cost-effective, is to do the birthday party at your house. Because
Agree.
It doesn't matter how many kids you have. Once you've set it up, you can have almost, it's almost unlimited, right? And the costs aren't that high. So Memories Made is our selection. We have a great offer from them. Very high-quality birthday event. They do everything from the backdrop, the decorations, the content, the cake stands. I mean, everything. I mean, there's so much that they do. They have add-ons from petting zoos, face painting. I mean, this is really an incredible birthday. And the prices are amazing. So, like, I mean, the backdrop setup starts at 1,200 for the basic package. And then they also have all the entertainment add-ons, which are almost unlimited. Of course, go to Kids App. You'll see our special price for them and comes highly recommended from our side.
I have to say, we had a party at home last time. The only downside about parties at home is people don't leave. You've got to start kind of tidying up. whereas we often have parties at the park, at Safatou Park, and I've seen people going to like the Al Khos Pond Park, and that's often really nice because you've kind of got the entertainment already. You've got a swing, you've got a slide, and if you get someone to help you out with, you know, a bit of decor, if that's above you, then happy days. And one last party suggestion. Where are we going?
I did my older son Kenan's birthday here. And then, of course, the next year, my daughter, Serene, who's 10, asked for it. And you know what? I love the Wave House because it's a place where the grown-ups and the kids can enjoy the birthday. It's almost a social outing. There's amazing food. The F&B is great. You know, it's at Atlantis. They have bowling. They have electronic games. They have VR. They have soft play. So even the parents can get involved, and we did. That's 200 dirhams for the weekday birthday. And on the weekend, it's either 300 or 400, depending on the package you choose.
We've only got a minute to talk about the weekend, but I'll do a quick roundup of your list because I think there's some fantastic things on there. When I said we had our kids' birthday party at home, it's because we had Magic Phil come and he is out and about. He's got some shows coming up, but he's also going to be performing at California Kitchen. You've also included the Courtyard Playhouse, the improvised story time. This is one of our favourite things to do as a family. 11:30 Saturday morning, different themes from Roald Dahl to superheroes to drawing. It's incredible. Tell us more.
Sorry, Helen. Go on. I have to tell you, what? I've done that myself. I actually signed up for a course for myself.
Good
at the Courtyard Playhouse.
I'm terrified of improv.
And I was supposed to be one of those superhero kind of guys. But I pulled out partly from fear, partly because I had some other obligations.
Yeah, right, you did. So you got the nerves. You need to get on that stage. You'd be fantastic at it. And on the food front, kids eating free at Yo Sushi, baking workshop at Mondu, and I know you've got some awards coming up. What do we need to know about that, Kareem?
So I don't know if you recall, but before this whole massive, you know, global pandemic of COVID, we did the Kids Up Awards in 2019. It was amazing. It was really special. And this year, finally, we're going to do it again, the Kids Up Awards 2023. Nominations coming now. The event's going to be in February. It's going to be really fun for everybody who participates.
A couple of messages going, where can we find out more? Kids Up is where you need to go. As Kareem said, lots of information on there and the chance to get some good deals as well. Thank you so much, though. Really appreciate it. I'll see you on stage at Courtyard Playhouse very, very soon. Do not disappoint me or the children, okay? Have a good one. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8. Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.